Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of Sweden, where I'm super excited about this special podcast that we're doing right now. This is a story time where we will take one special chapter from our newest book that is available now on backtojerusalem.com called The Lame Shall Take the Prey. We've chosen a special chapter that takes you back in time about 150 years ago, where you can see what China was like for the very first missionaries to go into some of the most unreached areas of all the world. This is a special missionary that went into the city of Wenzhou. Listen as he describes what daily life was like with evil, dark opposition against the spreading of the gospel. You're going to love this chapter. Bethany, share with us this chapter from The Lame Shall Take the Prey.
Chapter 8, Why Do the Heathen Rage? At the end of September, my husband insisted I should go to Shanghai for a fortnight's rest before beginning some fresh work contemplated for the autumn. My last words were, "I can go away contented and happy, for the people are so quiet and contented again." Little did I anticipate the blow that was about to fall so soon. On Saturday evening, October the 4th, just 1 week after I had left, while Mr. Suthill of the Methodist Free Church was conducting their usual prayer meeting, a few rowdies collected at his chapel door and noisily demanded admittance. When the door was opened, they ran away. This was repeated two or three times, and on the door being again opened, several rushed in throwing stones and evidently bent on mischief. Someone raised the cry, "Burn the foreigners out!" And almost before the words were uttered, they lighted torches and, with paraffin oil, set the place in flames. The chapel was close by the house, and Mr. Suthill, fearing a general conflagration, went to the yamen to beseech help. The magistrate, thinking Mr. Suthill might meet with bodily injury, refused to let him out again. But he, accompanied by some soldiers, went in the hope of quelling what had now become a serious riot. He was told, however, he better go back. The people were bent upon mischief and he might get injured in the fray. His chair was, indeed, considerably battered, and, Mandarin-like, he thought discretion the better part of valour, and the soldiers sent to intimidate the rioters joined with them in their evil work. When Mr. Suthill's house, chapel, and all he possessed were in ruins, they made for the Roman Catholic premises. The poor priest had a hard time of it. Frightened almost out of his senses, he lay hid for 3 days in the firewood house of a friendly neighbour, and was at last disguised as a Chinese coolie and taken to the yamen. The destruction there was thorough. The mob now seemed like tigers who had tasted blood and determined to make a clean sweep of everything belonging to the hated foreigners. From the Roman Catholic place, they went to Mr. Jackson's, of our own mission, and when they reached our chapel, only 3 minutes' walk from the house, Mr. Stott felt it was time to seek a place of safety. Dr. McGowan of the Chinese Customs had, at great personal risk, come to Mr. Stott's help. They collected our 16 schoolgirls, the younger of whom had to be taken from their beds, servants and all others within our gates, in order to seek shelter in the magistrate's yamen. As they went back out the gate, the first contingent of the rioters burst in at the front and in a few moments were in possession of the place. Happily, the yamen was near, or it might have fared badly with them, for they were freely pelted with stones, one of which struck Mr. Stott's pith helmet a heavy blow, which made his hat roll to the ground, and caused him to run the gauntlet bareheaded. A moment after, Dr. McGowan staggered under the blow of another, and the frightened school children who were clinging to his coattails were scattered, here and there. When they reached the yamen, several of the girls were missing. Our cook, an active, earnest man, went out in search of them, but it was the next day before the family was complete. Two or three of them had to spend the night in a temple courtyard, scarcely daring to breathe, lest their hiding place should be discovered. I have said complete, but there was one dear little thing, 3 years of age, the pet of the household, who was carried off, and we never saw her again. In a few hours, the destruction was general, not only the effects of the missionaries, but also of the foreigners in the Chinese customs. Everything foreign was destroyed. They showed a nice discrimination, for the latter who lived in old temples had all their goods, furniture, etc. carried out, even partition boards and flooring burnt in the front yard, while the buildings were left intact. After completing their work of destruction in the city, they tried to reach the English consulate, which is situated on a small island in the middle of the river, but the magistrate had anticipated their intention and ordered all boats to the other side. They tried to make a raft, but failed, and the next day the homeless refugees were escorted by a strong band to the island. On Monday, the rioters went to our country chapel in Dongling, 20 English miles away, and burnt it also to the ground. We all shared the same fate, proving that the feeling was anti-foreign, not anti-missionary. The officials acted with creditable promptness in paying the indemnity demanded by the consul, and in 6 weeks from the date of the riot, Mr. Stott was able to return and began rebuilding, leaving our school children in the kind care of Dr. and Mrs. Lord of Ningbo, who most unselfishly received them into their school, although it was at the time quite full, and kept them under the care of their own matron. It was an anxious time. The war had upset our steamer communication and Ningbo was blockaded. For 3 months we were without letters and heard vague rumours of the bombardment of Ningbo and flight of the foreigners there, which happily proved untrue, while they, poor things, suffered also through false reports concerning us. But in all this, the Lord kept our hearts resting upon himself. The news of Mr. Stott's arrival soon spread, and it was a great joy for pastor and people to be reunited. In February 1885, Mr. Stott writes, "My dear Mr. A, I have just finished the duties of the day and will now indulge in the pleasure of a chat with you. You are one of my oldest friends, and that gives me license. I am here alone as yet, for my dear wife could not leave Shanghai owing to the death of Miss Mitchin. And indeed, I was not in a state to recover her sooner. After gaining official liberty to return, I came by first steamer and at once began to search for a temporary home. After many failures, the Lord gave me success. I bought a small house adjoining my former property, and I'm now living in it in tolerable comfort. I had to pull down the ruined walls of our dear old home, and I must confess it cost me many a pang to stand by and see it done. An ideal little garden, which was such a pleasure to my wife, all disfigured, not a plant, shrub, or even a weed left. We had a large number of flowers in pots which were mostly thrown down the well. At every corner were signs of the most wanton destruction. Surely their mischievous ingenuity came from near the bottom of the bottomless pit. And now, quiet has been restored. The mandarins are doing very little to bring the rioters to justice. Many of the native Christians have been looted of their all, and the mandarins will not even look at their petitions for redress. Very few out of China have any idea of the weakness and corruption of the mandarinate and their hatred of all Europeans. Those brought to justice are comforted and consoled by the mandarins, telling them they must be apprehended and punish them through pressure, for the foreign devils are very cruel and destitute of mercy. I am now rebuilding the girls' school. It will be finished next month, also the chapel at Dongling. Our own house is some distance on, but the city chapel still lies in abeyance. Hitherto the Lord has helped me, and I do need his help, for I am poor and needy. The British consul has entered into the case with much spirit and has done for everyone as well as he could. Two installments of the indemnity have been paid and another is almost due. I am glad to say that I have found nearly all the Christians have stood firm, only one having gone back. He seems to have lacked stamina to endure the long strain they were all exposed to after I left for Ningbo. And as I was over a month absent, it was a testing time for them all, for the worst was over before I could return. Others have got a new start and are bolder in the faith than formerly, and some new converts have been drawn out. So on the whole, I do not think that we have lost much, and maybe all the better for this searching.
This is a story that we wanted to bring to you, not because it was dense with theology or that it was a literary masterpiece like other parts of this book are. This was just a basic story from 150 years ago from the daily life of a missionary. We felt that this pulls the curtains back and gives you a little bit of a sample, a little bit of a taste of what the very first early missionaries went through. How they were attacked on a regular basis. Some of the things that they built were way too easily destroyed. And they would have to go back and start from ground zero again. And I love that it feels like in some ways we're like a fly on the wall watching this story unfold as he retells it from 150 years ago. I want to thank you so much for joining us for this special podcast, the Storytime Podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, and this story was read by Bethany from our UK office. I pray that it has been as much of a blessing for you as it has been for us. Thank you, and God bless.